once again to Dual Wielding episode 50. I'm surprised we made it this far. I think it's been a year and a half since we started this podcast. May of 2010, just around E3 2010.
Wow.
And yeah, we've gone weekly for the most part for the last year or so. I mean, granted, it's 50 because we don't count an item. As I mentioned, I think when we did our fall game preview shows, it was 4 episodes. We didn't count the Game of the Year ones, which is 2 episodes. We don't count the E3 pre and post, so that's another 2 episodes. So a lot of episodes add up. I think officially on this website we've posted 60 episodes.
Yeah.
But this is technically episode 50 of the ones we're counting. And, I mean, we have a very special episode lined up for you this week. I mean, we have Chad joining us hungover.
And that's why it's special.
The super
special. Chad's here.
How is it special if it's as usual?
Every episode's a special episode here at the Dual Wielding.
And there's not even an Atlas game coming out this week.
Yeah, I know. I have really no reason to be here because I do.
There's no StarCraft expansion pack either.
We can talk about that if you want.
And as you heard, we have Jason.
Howdy.
But like I said, it's a very special episode. We have a graphic artist from Irrational Games joining us this week. You want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hey guys, I'm Kalen Barade over here. More specifically, I work on the 3D environments, and I'm kind of overseeing all the environment artists on our team, so it's kind of nice to just, you know, see a breadth of people and kind of work across the different disciplines. I mean, right now I'm also kind of working with, like, the concept artists to make sure we have the environments for Bioshock Infinite, like, you know, where we want them and where we need them, if we need to get a general look for an area, and how we can kind of break that down into set pieces so that other environment artists can quickly make it, and obviously so we can make it so this game ends up shipping well, so... You know, it's trying to work across all the different disciplines.
Yeah, I mean, you were mentioning it, and I was just kind of thinking, it's like, I assume you work hand in hand with, like, the artists and stuff like that who create, like, enemies and stuff like that, because you don't want a game where the enemies don't really match the environment or the environment don't match the enemies.
Yeah, sure. Oh, definitely. And I mean, you know, it's obviously Bioshock, and the history of Bioshock has been a huge just storytelling franchise. It's a little bit of a different game where a lot of the scene in the environment tells a lot of what's going to be happening in the environment. It doesn't mean the characters aren't there. I mean, you need to have them both, like you said. They both need to line up, and there needs to be, like, a plausibility between the two.
I mean, was it, like, any... I mean, because this is your first Bioshock work. Was it any type of pressure coming in on the third game in the franchise and saying, I have this huge reputation to live up to now?
For me, I was more excited. I was kind of, like, looking at it as, wow, this is a great new start. And a couple of the previous games I worked on, this was just a totally different approach. And I'm always open to new art styles, and I think... kind of the Bioshock universe, I mean, especially with the new stuff that we've been doing, is just a total departure from what 1 and 2 were. So it's just, for me, it's like refreshing to kind of see that, and it's also a little bit of a different in terms of everything that I think that's kind of out there right now in the market, which I've always been that person. I like to kind of see new and different things, and I think there's great stuff out in the market, but... you know, I'm really for a colorful world right now. I think that's what Bioshock's trying to do.
Yeah, I should mention, like, one of the things is you were introduced to me via Twitter, and one of the first conversational pieces you had was, I think you mentioned that a lot of times the graphics department get a lot of the, you know, a lot of the acclaim, but nobody ever focuses on the artistic part of game development. And yeah, I said it before, I think I mentioned this when I responded to you, that I consider myself an art whore. Where I value an art style.
Yes, well said. So poetic. Yeah, no, I agree.
And yeah, I mean, and I don't want to harp on Battlefield and, like, Modern Warfare and stuff like that, where you just kind of have, like, the same type. I mean, I realistic environments serve their purpose.
Sure.
But I do like a game that really kind of creates its own world and universe. And, I mean, BioShock does it. I mean, I think the original BioShock, one of the main things about it was its environment. And then, you know, seeing the first trailer for BioShock Infinite when it released last summer, when they were, you had this huge, expansive outdoor world and this real, like the real system, which is very unique for any type of, I think, open world game. I don't know. I mean, not open world game. I don't know any game that kind of uses the real system similar to that. I think the closest thing would probably be Metroid Prime 3 Corruption.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess moving on, like you said, you were excited to get to work on this project. I mean, how has it been working on it so far?
For me, it's been a great process. I mean, this Irrational Games team is just completely different than any other studio I've worked at. Many of the same people are there that created BioShock, so you're around just a lot of very talented people that they've been in the industry for a while, so they know exactly what they're doing, and you know, they're smart people. They want to do it through, they want to tell a lot of the scene through the environment. And I think that's an important aspect, down to little things where it's, even, linking up, politics and, what's happening in, mainstream. I don't know if you guys have been reading any, the Kotaku articles, but, BioShock's kind of, we're trying to touch base upon similar things that are happening in real world right now, but make them set, obviously, within our time period. And, you know, oftentimes in history, things repeat. I mean, that's just, it's like the same old thing. And we're trying to put a unique spin on it within our own world. But, with working with the people at Irrational, I've kind of learned a lot. And I have seen myself actually grow as an artist and kind of, because, I never really went to a traditional art school per se, but working at this company, I have, my job description is an artist, right? So I've kind of always kind of considered myself a little bit of a, getting into the industry. Everyone's got their own story to tell of how they got here. But, I kind of just did it through, I call it almost as if hacking into the industry in terms of, I always knew I was a creative person, but I kept working at it in order to become a better artist. And, I think I kind of learned through different studios of what I liked and what I could improve upon. And that's something you always take working at other places.
So, I mean, you kind of hinted at it, but how did you break in? What was your first job in the field?
Yeah, life story, go.
Yeah, I know. I worked at just a small studio out in New Jersey. We did Hour of Victory, which got rated 70s. Whatever, it was not that good of a game, but at the time, it was the first Unreal 3 World War II game. And, it was a small studio, but I actually learned a lot that working with 25 guys, we could make a Xbox 360 game, and, I learned from that point on, if I wanted to get better or actually move on in the industry, I needed to be at a bigger and better studio.
Okay, and from there you went on to...
Yeah, and then from there I kind of went on to Gearbox down in Plano, Texas, which was, for me, I originally grew up in Michigan, but, I've been living on the East Coast predominantly almost all my life in Massachusetts, so going down to Dallas was just a completely different exposure. A great office down there, and it kind of allowed me the opportunity to work on a couple big titles down there. The one I mainly started working on was Brothers in Arms, Hell's Highway. And then we wrapped up production on that, and I then went on to Aliens Colonial Marines, which is still kind of in production right now, which I'm actually really excited to kind of see that thing come out, because I haven't worked on it for the last few years, because I've obviously been up here working on BioShock, but it's really, I think it's coming together pretty nicely, and it's going to be pretty good for the franchise, that franchise.
As someone who's had some inside information on that game, from the outside, it's kind of looked like that game's been kind of a roller coaster. It appeared that it might have been canceled for a while or vaporware, but then it came up again at E3 as a Wii U title. Has it been just a steady development, or was it rocky, or do you know any of that?
For me, I came on about, I want to say, either midway through development, and I was just at a time where I was dealing with kind of multiple disciplines. Like, I was working with the weapons, and we were doing a lot of, like, just, we're doing stuff in-house, but we were also dealing with outsourcers. I mean, that's the nature of any studio. You got to deal with outsourcing just to cut down costs and obviously make sure you get a high-grade bar set on your art style in terms of what we're looking at and within a time frame that you can set. For me, I mean, I left that studio, and I've kind of not been in touch with, you know, how it's been doing other than kind of what you guys have been seeing as well. But I'm just kind of happy to kind of see it finally get out and actually see what's going on.
Okay. And, yeah, now you're on Bioshock, and hopefully that ships sometime next year. I'm assuming you can't give us a release date here.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, you can.
Yeah, no, we're working hard at it. That's all I got for you guys. Well, I think you'll definitely be excited, though. It's I'm feeling very confident about this project, and I know our whole team is, which is good.
Any chance of it showing up at the VGAs?
Oh, I don't know about that either.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, another thing I wanted to touch on, and this is partially because the site is named after alcohol for some reason. one of your personal projects has been coming up with this gummy vodka variation that you've been working, that's still in, what is it, gummy bears into vodka.
Yeah. That's funny. I thought you were joking about that through email, but no, you were telling the truth.
I never kid about my work.
Yeah. No, I mean, I kind of find out about these, all these high school kids are now taking gummy bears and putting them into alcohol, you know, vodka or whatever of your sort.
Yeah, letting them sit high school kids, months. Right?
Yeah, I know, high school kids, you know, the perfect age for that, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I was like, hey, well, you know, I am not in high school anymore or college, so why not start this up a little late? And so we've been doing that. And one of the newest things I wanted to do was, I don't know if you guys have seen the actual huge gummy bears. They're like 2 to 3 inches long. It's one continual gummy bear. And it's on like a popsicle stick almost. But we're going to try to soak this thing in vodka to kind of see the results for it. It's going to be a mess, of course, but.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, like, I'm trying to figure, because the gummy bear is going to be soaked in the alcohol, and then you're going to eat the gummy bear?
Oh, yeah. It's actually pretty nice because, I mean, if you want to sit there and eat it, that's your thing, but it usually just tastes so much like alcohol or whatever it's been sitting in that it's a gummy bear, so you can just swallow it easily. And before you know it, you know, 5 gummy bears later, you're feeling at least a little better.
Sounds like a choking hazard.
You know what, guys? I gotta go. I have a couple errands to run, so I'm just gonna be back.
Okay, good.
When do you ever hear that expression, 5 gummy bears, and you sign off the handle?
Yeah.
It actually reminds me of one of the things I used to like in college, and this is, again, off subject, is jungle juice, and that was when you would soak fruit in alcohol overnight.
Yes, that stuff's the best.
Yes. And one night I didn't drink the alcohol. We just got drunk eating the fruit, like the apple slices and oranges.
Yes.
And sitting in alcohol. So you walk around with that. Nobody knows it's like soaked in alcohol. You can consume it without getting in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what we did actually for Halloween here is we did the gummy bears. We put them in bags.
And gave them the itch.
So we're walking around with this messy bag of gummy bears. Of course, people are wondering what you're putting your hands into, you know, during a party. So everyone's trying to come over and paw through this bag. Hey, but needless to say, everyone was happy at the end of the night.
And when they started puking up gummy bears the next morning, they knew why.
Yeah, it wasn't my house, and that, you know, I'm long gone by that point.
I mean, working at a video game studio, and I will tie this back into the gummy bears, watch how. I mean, it's like Halloween taken as like a major event during our production, or is it just kind of a day you folks work through?
Like the hiring process?
Halloween. Like, I'm
oh,
just
Halloween.
Trying to get
it. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's actually, we took like half day off and, you know, a couple of the studios I worked at, like even down in Gearbox was a big, big deal. I mean, everyone down there would dress up and even the same up here at Irrational. It's kind of a fun day where, you know, you'll get whatever, like we had like some catered food come up to us this year. and there was a big opportunity where people were cutting pumpkins. But it's funny because, you know, we had our concept artist cutting a pumpkin next to somebody who's working in QA or somebody who's working in level design. So you're getting just a range of pumpkins, but then you have people like Ken Levine actually voting on what he thinks the best pumpkin is. You know, it's just a fun day to kind of take a rest and get some good stuff in you.
Yeah, I was just trying to get an idea of like what's like the working conditions like. I mean,
I think little work is getting done that day because everyone's wearing, you know, we had one guys last year at Irrational, and they were wearing those the full-on horse suit. You guys ever seen that one? It's kind of like a one guy is the ass of the
horse.
Oh,
yeah.
So they're trying to sit in their chair. You know that's not comfortable. They can barely fit in this chair. And they're trying to get work done. It's like, come on.
I always wondered, how do you determine who gets to be the ass? I mean, the costume you don't want to be. Your face isn't, well, I mean, one, your face is shoved up another person's ass all night. But, like, there's no breathing room in that costume.
No.
For the second person.
Yeah, they ended up winning, I think, first place prize. And they got, of course, a romantic dinner to the local sushi place. The two of them, the girl. We felt it was appropriate. Or I think Ken did.
That's awesome. How many people come dressed up as, like, Big Daddies or anything? Or is that too, like, faux pas?
No. Definitely people do that. I mean, we get, like, splicers. And, I mean, a lot of people will do it. And just, I think we had, like, about... I want to say like five people or so dressed up. I mean, we have a little bit of a smaller company. I think we got like 120 people. So, I mean, we've actually grown up to that size within the last, we were at like 100 about a year ago, I want to say. Yeah. So we've been slowly growing, but, you know, getting the right people in and, you know, everyone's kind of got their own take on it, but of the costume that they wear or whatnot.
I was going to say, have you gotten the chance to attend any conventions? You know, like PAX or...
Yeah, definitely. We went out to PAX. I don't know. Did you get a chance to come out at all?
No.
Yeah, we went out to PAX East. That was nice because the company just was like, hey, you know what? Take the day off and actually go down to PAX East, see what else is going on down there.
It's in Boston, right? PAX East?
Yeah. I think that's great that it's in Boston because there's not a lot out here in terms of, you know, video game development. I mean, there's obviously studios, but it's not the... It's not Austin. It's not, you know, Cali by any means.
No, and I mean, for the most part, the East Coast has two conventions now. It's PAX East, and we have New York Comic Con. Other than that, most things are located on the West Coast, which, I mean, again, it's fine if it's centralized there. But like you said, there are a lot of people on the East Coast who probably don't get that same type of exposure because they can't make the trip out every year.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's even growing, though, the East Coast and... video games, because a lot of, I know actually in Massachusetts, they just got, more, like Hollywood studios to kind of come out here and actually start to do more filming. It's been like a big thing, you know, the scenery and the seasons are, like, think about how many movies have kind of been released, like The Town was filmed out here. I mean, there's just a handful of movies, but, you know, with obviously Hollywood studios coming out there, there's more video game studios, or at least there's more interest for it. So I'm always encouraging that to kind of come out of this area.
What other like studios are in the Massachusetts area?
Harmonix.
Yep.
Are they really?
Harmonix. Yep. Down in Cambridge, and then there is what's the name of it? The one out in Worcester, Mass, who's doing Lord of the Rings.
Turbine.
Yeah, Turbine. I don't know why I was trying to confuse it with EA's. Turbine, but yeah, there's Turbine as well, and then there's Rockstar, they were Rockstar New England, who's in Andover, Mass, but they now just transferred over to, I forget the name, but they're basically, they're a subsidiary of Rockstar.
Okay. Is there like a sense of community among the development, because of, you know, since there's so few of you on the East Coast?
Yeah, oh, definitely, I think there's a lot of exchange between other developers in the area, whether it's, you know, if sometimes in this industry it's notorious for, you know, layoffs and whatnot. So I think there's a nice sort of community out here where they allow people to kind of, if they hear about something going down in another studio, to kind of either take other people on board or just, you know, really highly recommend people. And that's a great thing. I mean, I think the industry is small and there should be a lot of good communication between, if people are working hard and they're doing good work, hell, you know, they should keep moving on and always be employed.
Yeah. I mean, just this week we had what I think Warner Brothers laid off people and.
Yeah, that was sad. Yeah. I think that was what, the Seattle one?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I swore somebody in Canada closed down
Silicon
this past
Knights
week.
Took a
yeah, Silicon Knights.
Oh yeah, Silicon Knights. There we go. I mean, it's getting, I mean, and it's kind of sad, but it's getting hard to keep track of them. Because like, every week you get two or three announcements instead of that.
Well, it's crazy too because they just got a big government grant that was supposed to add more jobs in addition to retaining those jobs, and then they had to cut all those people. So definitely some troubled times up there.
Yeah.
I blame Chad.
Yeah, I'll take the blame for that, sure.
I wouldn't blame him. He's probably too intoxicated to really care most of the time.
Ouch. But true.
But yes, I mean, as part of, as a game developer, do you get much time to play video games?
Yeah, I mean, recently I just kind of picked up Dark Souls. I've been having a good time with that game. As difficult as it is, it's so rewarding for me. Just to kind of see the level construction that they're doing is just, oh, it's so interesting.
I mean, is that something you have to work with when playing games now? It's like, I would have done this differently. But, you know, this is actually a pretty good technique, you know. Maybe I can incorporate this into my next project or, you know, pitch it to somebody.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, that's like with anything. It's fun, sure, but at the same time, you kind of feel like you're always a little bit in work. Because, you know, seeing, especially as like an artist or just seeing how levels are constructed and how, I mean, you look at, like, the latest projects, like, come out of Gears of War, Battlefield now. They're all inspirations to everyone in the community. Everyone in the industry right now, it's, like, seeing little things that they do because, I mean, they're great games. But how are they getting those games to be, like, a polished look? And a lot of little things. And I think we're now at a point now where things like lighting and material definition in engines are just so big and so key that, you know, games are starting to look like films, cinematic films.
And some of them fake them too, but I won't get into Uncharted too much right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Dark Souls has been, and this is the same thing that happened with Demon's Souls for me personally, is that I just hear about how difficult it is and how much people die, and it just kind of, I'm not interested in it because I don't want to like force myself to enjoy a game because it's kicking my ass.
I gotta admit, I was kind of that same way. I was a little weary upon picking it up, but seeing how their city on this newest one is interconnected, it's just like one large city. Like, there's areas that connect to other areas. They must have made this map, like, not within the actual game initially. They must have, like, laid it out in actual paper or some sort of, like, chalkboard. Because it's just amazing the amount of paths that actually connect up to each other. Where, like, if you played any other game that's kind of out right now, there, a lot of them are just going to be, like, you go through one streaming area, it closes, and then you go into the next. And, you know, you don't come back to that level. But this is so interconnected, you'll often come back to that for a checkpoint. Like, it's just an interesting idea from a level design perspective.
Okay. Have you been playing anything else?
Oddly enough, I've been on the complete opposite spectrum is the new NHL, just because the physics in that game look phenomenal. I've always kind of been a big hockey fan, so for me, it's just a big game to kind of get and play with my friends online.
See, this is the part where Chad's expertise is supposed to come in. I honestly don't watch hockey at all.
I love
all the Canadian in them.
Great.
Yes, that's what I said. You're Canadian. You should know hockey. I mean,
oh, yeah. I'd get kicked out if I didn't. Oh, that's like deportation right there if you don't like hockey. So, yeah. No, it's great. And I've heard a lot of great things about the NHL games recently. I don't think I've played one since, like, 08, maybe?
Yeah, I was kind of the same, too. But this, I don't know if you guys have seen the new one. The physics in it is just phenomenal. Like, the goalies actually look real.
I forgot where I read it this past week. I read a lot of stuff, apparently. There's, like, an article about should fights be allowed in hockey games. Because, I mean, part of my enjoyment of watching any hockey game is usually to see when a fight breaks out.
Yeah.
And I guess some games restrict that now.
Yeah, definitely. Right. And then, but I don't think it's, you know, I think it's more like frowned upon at certain, sometimes during certain games, but, you know, they might say, like, you know, don't hit the star player. Yeah, and that's something that's kind of not addressed to the public, but it's always going on behind the scenes. I mean, you know what I love is, like, some of the big rivalries. You'll get, like, Detroit Red Wings versus Colorado Avalanche, and there'll be goalies fighting each other. Like, you know, when do you ever see that in any other sport? Two goalies going head-to-head at center ice, fighting each other. I think it's ridiculous, and that's why I love it.
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I mean, I can fringe entrance when the U.S. almost beats Canada in the Olympics, but that's about as far as my
keyword
hockey,
so. Almost.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, if you folks compete with us on, like, basketball or something, the Olympics, I'm sure we'd give you attention, too.
What's basketball? I don't think that's a sport anymore.
All we need is Steve Nash. That's it. Steve Nash will walk all over your whole team.
Yeah, are you guys playing anything cool? Like, anyone picked up any good games? Recommend?
Who wants to kick us off this week? I mean, I'm sure you've all been playing. Well, actually, let's go with Jason, since he just put up his Battlefield 3 review for us.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
It's on nerdsontherocks.com, if you guys want to go check it out. And, I don't know, I've been mostly playing Battlefield for review, and that's been pretty fun. It was coming off the beta, actually, was not as excited about it, but, you know, DICE knows how to make a multiplayer shooter, that's for sure. And they know how to push hardware to be as, like, you know, it's incredible how much they've gotten out of the current generation of consoles. Like, it's, I know you put, you know, you put it side by side to the PC version running max specs and you can nitpick things out, but, like, it's really incredible what they've done on this generation of consoles. And besides that, I don't know, some FIFA here. Now that I finished Battlefield, I went back to Arkham City and played that a little bit last night. But
that game's, yeah, pretty nice. Like, yeah. You're looking at that just because they're using the same engine, the Unreal 3 that we're using. So,
right. Actually, as an environmental artist, I'm kind of curious to hear how you think of Arkham City versus Arkham Asylum, because for me personally, while Arkham City improves a lot of things, I think it really falls short in its environment, whereas this, you know, really monotonous kind of rundown city that's kind of flooded and really industrial, whereas I thought Asylum had a lot of, you know, unique environments that were varied, colorful, interesting, it's kind of a, you know, I don't love Arkham City the way I did that because it's not the whole package to me, I don't know, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I've kind of heard those similar complaints on that. For me, I mean, I love what Arkham City is doing, and obviously it's more open world in a sense, but they got some beautiful things upon what they're doing in the background, and they're almost, I think it's the whole picture, right? You know, like,
Definitely.
You know, it's just, like, I love when you're on the top of the buildings and you're seeing, like, the lights kind of glow, and they have just that fake matte painting in the background. And you know what? It almost doesn't look like a matte painting because it's done so well. And it's, you know, the amount of reuse that they're getting out of their textures and their assets, it's great that they actually compiled that together. But, you know, I understand, too, just the depth of the world. It's changed, but that's the hard thing, I think, with Unreal right now is getting an open level to feel immersive and yet rich, but still having it have that ability where you can go to every, you know, whether it's a rooftop or the ground like they're doing. And you know what? To get it like they did it, that's just kind of what you got to do at this point of the game. You know, it's just a different type of game other than, you know, a Battlefield where you're running on the ground a lot. And, I mean, sure, you can get
up. Yeah, definitely.
It's just, you know, they're two different games. And
totally.
But I think, you know, it's going to be great. I don't know if you guys have kind of been hearing a little bit about the new Grand Theft or you saw that new one. It's definitely interesting. It almost sounds bigger, too, a little bit of what the rumors are talking about than what any of the previous games were.
And that kind of scares me personally.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're saying it's something like five times bigger than RDR.
Yeah, crazy.
And, Yeah, that was a huge game in general. I mean, granted, cars are much faster than horses.
Thank God for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, just the scope of that, it's just like frightening me. My brain's like trying to scramble around the idea of a city that large. Because I mean, and I've mentioned this before, because you know, part of what I do on Twitter as well as hosted the RU debate, and we had the discussion about GTA, and a lot of people said they kind of prefer a smaller, more compact city because then you kind of, it's more intimate and you get to know it. And I think this is, speaks to Jason's point about why he prefers Arkham Asylum over Arkham City, is that you can have a lot more to do in that little space because you don't have to make this huge thing and try to make everything interesting.
Yeah.
You can just kind of focus on like these 5 or 10 things and make that really special and unique and stand out.
Yeah, it's a good point. Definitely is. I mean, you know, it's the old thing of making a game that almost, it looks and plays like it's in a corridor. Or, well, it doesn't look like it's in a corridor, but it plays like it's in a corridor. And it actually looks like whatever, you're in a different sort of space. But, you know, if it's just a hallway upon hallway, that's a lot easier to deal with. And you can, like you said, you can just art it up and actually make that feel like it's a little more rich, but it's really linear. It's A to B, right?
Yeah. And you know, that's something else, and I will parlay this into talking about Uncharted 3, which I just beat. And Uncharted 3 is a fantastic game. It's, you know, it's more Uncharted. But I think, and I've noticed this with a lot of reviews and even gamers, it's like there seems to be some type of dismissal of the Uncharted formula at this point, and I was curious as to why 3, because 3 doesn't really reinvent the formula from 1 and 2, but people had no issues with it then, but now a lot of people seem to be taking task with the fact that the game's extremely linear, and it does take control away from the players in a lot of ways, where it's just kind of like, it's not even like get from point A to point B, it's just like you know, we're pushing you to sign the sign, you just have to press the button at the right time to make sure we can continue the sequence for you. I think there are like 4 or 5 chase scenes in this game, and I think that's part of it, is that you don't really, there's not much exploration involved in those segments. It's just kind of running from whatever's behind you.
Right.
And I feel like those, I mean, it makes for a great cinematic set piece, you know, it stands out, you're thrilled, you know, gets the heart pumping, but I think a lot of people are just kind of noticing when you close it more as to what you do in the game, a lot of people take issues with it, and I mean, again, Uncharted seems to be getting a lot of backlash. There was that. There's the aiming issue that people seem to be having with it. And I think part of it is just, and this is, I'm assuming this is something you have to deal with BioShock, is that after 2 games, you know, like you have to surprise people, but people also kind of want to expect certain things from a franchise at this point. So it's like giving them what they expect while still doing something new that doesn't really ruin the franchise or formula for them.
Right, right. Oh, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's the nature of, you know, any sort of franchise upon building upon it. And I think, you know, that's one thing that BioShock is trying to be, or at least the third one, BioShock Infinite here, is, you know, they're trying to touch upon what previously was, you know, still keeping it within that art style vein in terms of the characters, but in terms of the world, it's obviously different, and they wanted to have it something that was not done before.
Yeah, I like the approach that you guys at Irrational are doing with Infinite, because I think a lot of times, you know, the industry gets really obsessed with sequels, and, you know, it leads to these problems that Earl's talking about, where you're trying to please one segment of the community by giving them more of what they love, but at the same time you want to expand, you want to do new things, and I think things like BioShock Infinite, things like Red Dead Redemption are a good approach in that, you know, they take the core identity of what people love, but apply it in a completely different way. And I think that's a lot more interesting and something that, you know, other developers should try to do.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I mean, no, that's good to hear. And I think that's something that we strive to do on a daily basis. And, you know, it's, you know, kind of like what I touched upon earlier, is a lot of the core team from BioShock is here. So it's just, it's their same ideas and their same mentality, just in a different universe. And, or, well, no, same universe, I guess, but now up in the sky. So, they're approaching the same set of problems. It's just, how can we deal with it now, but up in the sky, right? And it's just, it's a big task. I mean, yeah, up in the sky, movies have been done, and it's always kind of been something that's been hinted at, but like, I mean, for us trying to make it this bright, sunny day, you know, early 1900s, very patriotic, that was something that we really wanted to, or I know Ken wanted to push, so we have to keep doing that daily on the environment side and keep pushing that aesthetic.
I mean, that's a serious question, I guess. Has there been any thought of changing your name to involve Sky in it? Because that seems to be the new thing in video games, having Sky in your name somewhere.
No, I don't think there has been. I've contemplated it on my end, but no.
Dioshock.
Yeah, I've heard that. All right, there's Sky.
I think that was the nickname people gave it when it was first revealed. with Skyfall just announced for James Bond, I'm sure Activision's hard at work on a game for that. You have Skyward Sword, Skyrim, Skylanders.
Oh yeah, sure. That is kind of weird, actually. Now thinking about it, since you mentioned it.
I mean, there's still time to change it around.
We got plenty of time for it.
That's what focus testing's for, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. We'll skew it. That's what the fans want, we'll give it.
And another game I've picked up recently, and it's partially because I had time on my schedule because I beat Uncharted and Batman so quick. And I think Chad has as well, Sonic Generations.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I'm really enjoying the game, but it has the same issues with modern Sonic that most modern Sonic still have. I think the game's already carried by classic Sonic, at least to me, but I think Chad has it. You actually prefer modern Sonic, right?
I'm only a few levels in. I just beat the jungle level. I guess it's like the third one. But so far, yeah, I find...
They have names.
Well, I know, but I don't know the names because, I don't know.
You're a Sonic fan.
Listen. Shut up. I find I get more of a feeling of speed from the new Sonic levels than the old ones. The old ones feel kind of sluggish to me, which they feel closer to the Genesis games than any like 2D Sonic game has gotten since then. But it still feels just really sluggish, and I find myself really, really wishing I had a homing attack, because that's...
You're used to it.
Well, that's part of the reason why I think the newer Sonic levels have that feeling of speed, is because you have four enemies, and it's just tap A four times, and you blow through them, and then you keep going. You're fast. They feel quicker. Anyway.
And I actually, this is something I agree with, but I think it's, you know, we're coming from here at two different points, I guess, is that the way I see it is, classic Sonic is more of a platformer to me, where it's like, you don't speed through the level, you take your time, you time your jumps, you use your momentum in that way, and it kind of, you know, I'm a huge Mario fan, so I'm more accustomed to a platformer where you take your time, you plan out your moves, and it's not just like from point A to point B as fast as you can. Where modern Sonic is, and that's always been kind of an issue with modern Sonic, I think, is people always start to emphasize speed over actual platforming, because a lot of times it's not even you controlling it, it's just like Sonic moving, and you'll have some control over like your homing, or you'll sprint into enemies and stuff like that. I do kind of agree with you that I do kind of miss the homing attack during 2D Sonic gameplay, but at the same time, it's what makes it different, and what kind of what makes it better to me is that like, you can use enemies in that way where like, if you time your jump and your momentum is fast enough, you can use them to kind of bridge gaps and get over obstacles faster. Or, you know, like, there's multiple paths in classic Sonic where it's dependent on how fast you're going and if you know the jump's coming. That's an issue I have with the game, and it's always been an issue with Sonic, is that you have to memorize the stage, because a lot of stuff, because of how fast you're going or because of the angle, you don't see what's coming ahead of you.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, oh crap, I just missed that jump. That would have taken me up here, but I had no idea how to time it because I didn't know it was there.
But that's why also, in modern Sonic, you can see it in front of you. So it kind of takes that thing away.
I don't know. I always play every level 6 or 7 times in a row anyway, because I'm actually OCD like that and won't go on to the next one until I S-rank the previous one.
Well, I was about to say, I found S-ranking that. I'm up to the final, well, not the final boss, but it's broken up pretty much into 3 generations, I guess, is what they're calling it. This is Genesis generation, there's the Dreamcast S gen, and then there's this gen. And I'm up to the final boss in the third gen. And what I do is I'll do the stage. I pick Modern Sonic first because I find his stages to be, yes, fun. So I'll do that first, and then I'll go back and pick Classic Sonic. But one of the things I'm really enjoying about the game, and I didn't think I would, are actually the challenges that you have to complete. Because they do emphasize different aspects of the game. Like, some of them are platforming challenges, some of them are speed-based challenges. Some of them use his annoying friends for various tasks. Some of them are races against yourself and stuff like that. So I do like those challenges, and they kind of, you know, they add not replayability, but they do add to the game, and it ends it, because it's a pretty short game if you go straight through, because it's, what, 9 stages times 2, so 18 stages, and then you have to complete like 1 challenge per stage, so 9 of those, 27 things and 3 bosses, so like 30. And, you know, it's a Sonic stage. Most of those things you can throw through in like maybe 2-3 minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm a huge fan of all the remix music. Well, not all the remix music, but I do like the fact that they have a lot of remix music in here.
Yeah, the music's fantastic so far. I really, really dig it.
I love how it transitions so smoothly on the... I guess you call it a hub. I don't really know. Level stack? I don't know what you would call
it. It's a hub world, I guess. That's what I would call it.
Okay. Because it doesn't function as a hub. It kind of functions like a level stack in like the 2D Mario games, but it also has like hub elements to it.
Yeah. No, right? Like the way it kind of, there's the main overworld theme, and then when you get close to a stage, it kind of fades into that stage's theme.
Yeah, and then like, if you keep on going, it will fade into the next stage's theme, because it's like that cutoff point where we'll just, you know, transition to the next stage and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's fantastic. And as you go further in the game, you unlock other music to use in different stages and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, I got it for $30 because Amazon had a sale on it. For that price, I think it's real worth it.
Yeah, it's $30 on Steam as well, which is actually amazing because it's, I think, like $59 or $49.
No, it's Sonic Generations?
Yeah.
I think you're talking about Canadian
prices. Yeah, in Canadian prices, it's like, I think it's like $50, but on Steam it's only $30, because we get screwed on the exchange rate, but Steam doesn't do that, so it's pretty great.
Yeah. And a review went up for that today as well, so check that out. Anything else you folks have been playing?
Well, Uncharted 3, but we kind of covered that. I don't think, it feels like it's missing something that Uncharted 2 had, and I don't know what it is yet,
I think,
but I'm not enjoying it as much.
I think it's just the fact that Uncharted 2 was new. I mean, it built so much on Uncharted 1 that, you know, it was a huge leap in it. And I think, I personally think Uncharted 2 is better than Uncharted 3, having completed it. But I think it's also that fact that you can't replicate that excitement the second time around. An example like this, and we had this debate last year when we were doing our game of the year, is Super Mario Galaxy 2, which I think on paper is a better game than Super Mario Galaxy 1, but I will always give the nod to Super Mario Galaxy because it had that element of surprise and awe in it that can never be replicated in a sequel because you've seen most of the tricks before. And I think that's the same thing with Uncharted 3, at least to me.
Yeah, that could be it. And I don't know, maybe it's just because, well, I thought it was just because I never play shooters anymore, so I thought it was just a me thing, but the shooting does feel off. And now
that's always been my biggest complaint. Yeah, always been my biggest complaint with the Uncharted franchise is, you know, they do great, great things, but something about the shooting just doesn't feel right, and that's been true of all of the games.
Well, I think if you were to nitpick, I think Uncharted does nothing remarkably special. Its platforming is subpar, its shooting isn't that great, its combat is kind of watered down, but it's the fact that, you know, taking all those elements, there's not any other game on the market that really does it in that combination. So, you know, it's, you know, the old expression, jack of all trades, master of none, but it's a fantastic, you know, it's a fantastic sum of all parts. And yeah, because the shooting's been awful since the first game. I hate the fact that the enemies are bullet sponges.
See, it actually bothered me in the second one, though. It felt fine then, to me.
And again, I don't think it was... I personally, like I said, I think the shooting's been terrible in the game since the first one. Again, I think it's the fact that you know, you were having more fun with it, so you didn't notice it.
Maybe. That could be it.
That, and there weren't, like, 2 years of shooters on the market. I mean, and I find it weird. A lot of people were complaining about Gears of War as well, and I'm like, I've never had an issue with Gears of War shooting.
I had an issue with Gears of War in that it broke my Xbox.
Well, I mean, I have my broken PS3 right now trying to cool it off, I think. I'll see if that works after this podcast. I guess quickly, since we have like 10 minutes, let's talk about what's been happening. I mean, I guess the biggest announcement of the week is obviously the GTA 5 trailer.
That happened. Still haven't seen it. The depths of my apathy know no bounds when it comes to GTA.
How did you miss it?
Oh, I don't care.
You know, I kind of reluctantly watched it. I felt like I was obligated to see it, but, you know, I personally have never been that big of a GTA fan either.
I'm not a GTA fan. I like the PlayStation 2 era ones. I like Vice City and I like San Andreas, and GTA 3 is good for what it is. You know, I've always had issues with it. Just like Uncharted, I always thought the aiming and melee in that game was terrible.
And shooting.
I think the aiming in Rockstar games in general is awful. I've had the same complaint with Red Dead Redemption.
In Red Dead Redemption, it made more sense because you had, you know, old weapons that aren't.
That shouldn't ruin the aiming. That should make your gun more sluggish, or maybe, you know, less accurate. It shouldn't make the gamer suffer from that. I mean, at some point, realism does start to hurt the game if you go too far.
I think it says something that the biggest praise they had for the shooting in GTA 4 was, it's not broken. Like, that was kind of the best thing you could say about it. Was, yeah, it's not the greatest, but look how bad it was before.
Yeah,
so they kind of got a free pass on that, I feel.
And again, it's kind of like Uncharted, where you get a good free pass if the sum of your parts are as good, and you have an element that kind of drags you down. And I mean, honestly, people who are GTA fans kind of are okay with that type of shooting. I think Saints Row is a better game from a gameplay standpoint, but we won't get into that. The thing that, I mean, the GTA 5 trailer was nice. It just didn't really show much. It's kind of like an introduction to the world, but I don't think we meet the main character. Well, we meet him in a narration, but I don't think he actually ever appears on screen, or we don't know who it is. I've never been a huge fan of GTA. Rockstar and me kind of go in different paths as far as video games go. I do like L.A. Noire, but that's about it for them. And then we had Sony, who posted losses of, I want to say, the tune of $350 million this past quarter.
Ouch.
Well, I mean, part of it was that they dropped the price of the PS3 in August, so that's about a month and a half.
And let's remember, they're gearing up for a worldwide platform launch. That those things tend to lose money. Not to mention, this is about the time when R&D costs for their PlayStation 4 should be ramping up. So, just like Nintendo, big loss is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's pretty much the same speech you gave for Nintendo last week.
Yeah.
And again, just like Nintendo, part of it is the fact that the yen is stronger than the euro and the dollar. So, a lot of their losses come from the fact that they, especially Sony, whose biggest market is Europe, hands down. They use a lot of money from that because even though they're selling products, they're not making a stronger profit in Japan. I get why it's news, but it's always so weird that I get it. People use money's never a good thing, but they are gearing up for a handheld launch. That was kind of weird for me. They don't have a, cause usually when you do these things, they have like the, estimates for next quarter. They don't have anything for the Vita, even though it's out this quarter in Japan. That was the only thing I found bizarre about their financial report. Any other news this week?
I don't know. I feel like there was something else, but I can't bring it to mind, so it couldn't have been that important.
I mean, there's always news, but, I mean, there's important news, and then there's news everybody's talking about.
Talk about Heart of the Swarm again. That's news.
No, we're not going to talk about that again. Oh, Yeah, we actually jumped off the subject so fast, I forgot to ask Jason. Have they fixed the Battlefield server issues now? Or
yes. So I'm playing on 360. Also have a roommate playing on PS3. In the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, not a single issue. So it seems like things are A-okay now. I don't know why EA can't get their servers ready for their launches, but hey, at least it works now.
I was also going to ask about the, what is it? Did you see that somebody paid with almost $2,000 to get an advanced copy of Modern Warfare 3 on eBay?
Yeah, I did see that. I don't know what's wrong with that person.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money, especially being that the game comes out in like 4 days.
Yep. Oh. Someone has way too much money, let's just put it that way.
Well, I mean,
someone's from the 1%. Yeah.
They want to be high enough level for everyone else gets it.
Yeah, that's what I say. That's the other thing. Who are you going to pay against?
Yeah.
I'm just going to pay Deathmatch against myself and get XP and stuff like that.
Yeah, especially since Microsoft's maybe sort of might ban you if you play online early.
I think the latest word is that they will now. They flip-flopped back and forth so many times.
Yeah,
they've totally mishandled this. Like, it's just one day you're getting banned, the next day you're not going to get banned. There's all sorts of miscommunication, and, you know, at the end of the day, the person that gets screwed is going to be the gamer. And it sucks if that gamer bought the copy legitimately.
Yeah, that always seems to be the case with these things. And it's the same thing with DRM on PC and stuff. And the people who end up getting screwed most of the time are the people who legit you buy the copies because everybody else knows the workaround. But yes, that was the other big news that I forgot about. The VGAs, big in whatever way you wanted, started getting announcements. I think the announcement of first three trailers we're going to have at the VGAs is New Alan Wake.
Woohoo!
I think we're getting the Metal Gear Rising trailer.
Yay.
Another trailer.
And I think they said a new game, a new IP from BioWare.
Yeah, probably Dragon Age 3.
I thought they said new IP.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like I read new game for that. Because, there was a hiring post for Dragon Age 3 a couple months back, and VGA's last year was the reveal of a quote-unquote new game that ended up being Mass Effect 3, so...
Wasn't that a new game at the time? Oh, you mean...
It was a new game, but it's like, you know, everyone knew Mass Effect 3 is in development, and...
Right.
So it seems like it's kind of lining up to be the same way, but, you know, we'll see.
Okay.
I'm just excited for more Rising stuff, because that game has been in limbo for a while, and it says Metal Gear on the title, so I want it.
See, that was a perfect setup, but you continued talking.
I think they're adding motion controls. That seems to make sense, right? Because it's a game about slicing at certain angles and stuff, and you have connect and move.
Yeah, but one of them is completely dead and the other one's connect, so... I thought that when they had the E3 trio, but at the same time, it seems like too much work for connect.
Hey, Move is going to have BioShock Infinite to support it, so... Hey, yeah. second search?
Yes, I don't know if that counts at that point. I mean, 2 years of this device and it gets one major game now. The other thing, and this is the thing a lot of people have issues with, is the fact that the VGA Game of the Year nominees were announced. Part of it was because as of this recording, two of those games are still not out. I understand that the nominees are picked from a panel of press who probably have these games. That's kind of an issue. My issue was more the fact that they opened up voting for that. People are voting for Skyrim and Skyward Sword. I don't know how. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's... Plus, you know, it kind of goes back to the issue that I don't know how you have an award show for 2011 games
in November.
November or early December, whenever it is. Because, you know, not only are some games not out, and even games that can't be reviewed fairly, like Star Wars The Old Republic, it doesn't matter if you have early coded that game. You're not giving it a fair review until it's actually out and you know you have all these players. But also, you know, just like any medium, you kind of need time for greatness to settle on you and to have a period of reflection where you can look back on it and compare it to other things in perspective. And that's why, you know, the Oscars are in March, and there's a whole build up to that. And I think, you know, it's kind of, I mean, that's also assuming you take the VGAs as a serious award show, which, you know, it's truthfully more of a marketing thing, but at the same time, it tries to be, and, you know.
Well, I mean, as of right now, it is the most mainstream game award show. I mean, it's kind of the only one. So yeah, I think a lot of people, and this is a double-edged sword, a lot of people do take it seriously, but then they also realize that it's not a legit award, because it does kind of cater to a certain audience. And I mean, this is an issue, I think, with any, Game of the Year stuff, is that, and this is why I favor stuff that comes out in October and November, is because it's like, oh, we have these, you know, like these amazing games just came out, that was great. And then you just kind of forget about the other 10 months of the year because you have these six amazing games right here, right now. I mean, of the five nominees, only one of them are not released in the last, what, 6 weeks
yeah.
of this, you know, holiday crunch, and that's Portal 2. I mean, I'm not saying that there were games this year that were better than the games released here.
The Witcher 2.
I mean, The Witcher, I think people can make a case for Deus Ex, possibly for Dead Space 2.
Catherine!
I don't know. I think Chad has a cold. even though it would be really, really difficult, I think a case could probably be made for L.A. Noire. Granted, I mean, on the same hand, I don't know of any of these games on this that I would take off personally.
I would trade Arkham City for Catherine. Yes, I would. I would do that. And then I would vote for Catherine.
I would point out that as of right now, Arkham City is the best reviewed game of the year.
Yeah.
So
isn't it the best on the PlayStation?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird. I don't know. There's like double the amount of reviews for the 360 version, but.
Well, all those people are wrong. I'm sorry.
It's not our fault you're bad at the game. it looks like it dropped down to 96 now. But it's still the best reviewed game of the year, and like I said, this is something I mentioned on the other podcast. It's a huge accomplishment, I think, for the fact that the best reviewed game of the year and a game of the year nominee is a licensed product. I mean, for the longest time, those were kind of always taboo in the gaming industry, like, oh, it's licensed, it's gonna be crap.
Well, because, you know, this goes to the approach that Rocksteady did, and I think this is something that, again, more so publishers than developers, because they're the ones bankrolling these things, need to take a serious look at. Because if you rewind back to, what was it, 2008, when Arkham Asylum came out, there's a pretty big movie called The Dark Knight that came out that same summer.
Wow.
Yeah, or the year before, right?
Yeah, there we go.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but instead of doing a, you know, quick, licensed Dark Knight game that, you know, would be subpar quality, rushed, blah, 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 you know, Warner Brothers let Rocksteady have the time to really dig in at the IP from a game perspective, because it's hard to take a 1.5 hour, 2 hour, you know, controlled narrative experience and suddenly stretch it out to an 8 hour interactive one. It's completely different. And, you know, there's something to be said about that approach. And it's made Warner a lot of money, so.
Yeah, I mean, and on the flip side, you can just do it. You can do it with Arkham City as well. They could have delayed the game into the summer and made it a tie-in.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think they gave the fans what they wanted, too. You know, they could actually play Batman in a real sense. I mean, the latest one, actually flying around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Batman is as popular as ever now, and it's not, and part of that is that it's not just based on, you know, one medium success with other mediums trailing. It's that Batman is a successful IP in multiple media, be it comics, games, movies, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, this is something, again, I mentioned on the podcast, is if you look at it, some of the best licensed games are the ones that really aren't kind of tied. I mean, GoldenEye, for example, was probably the hallmark before Batman came out. And even though that was tied into a movie, it came out 2 years after the movie.
And was only loosely based on the movie. So it wasn't really...
Well, I mean, I think it was based... I think it carried over most of the elements from the movie. Maybe not necessarily in the order, but it did kind of keep the plot, which is usually what happens. Like, you keep the general plot and you just kind of expand on set pieces and make them more, you know, gamey. Which can work. And another one, again, is War for Cybertron, which wasn't based on Transformers, the movie. Came out on its own. Phenomenal game. Same studio made Transformers Dark Side of the Moon game. Terrible game, because they had to rush it in a year. So there's that. And the other big announcement is Game Informer's cover for, I guess, December at this point, Rainbow Six. Thoughts on that?
I think it's cool. You know, we do have a lot of modern day military shooters, including Ubisoft's and Tom Clancy's own Ghost Recon coming out next year, but Rainbow Six has always been a little different. The one issue I have with it is that with the announcement, they released a Target trailer, which I didn't realize this is the 2005 Sony E3 press conference all over again, but come on, Target trailer, what good does that do you? People are just going to bash your game for not living up to it.
Yep. And for some reason, that reminds me, wasn't there another game announced at the VGAs like 2 years ago? What is it called? It's like the line. It's like a military shooter. But
oh, Spec Ops The Line. I believe that's been canceled since.
That game's been in development hell for a while now. It's been like put on hold, then brought back, then canceled, then uncanceled, and I don't know what state it's in right now.
Oh, speaking of development hell and news this past week, did you folks see that, I think it was Gearbox who said that Duke Nukem Forever was not reviewed fairly because a lot of people were reviewing it for, I think he said people were using it as a soapbox to knock old school shooters.
No, it was a shitty game.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. It's like, you know, you can say that. You can say it was a bad game. Call it a spade a spade.
Yeah, I mean, that particular game, you know, it's been in development for, what, 10, 12 years? So obviously a lot of its, you know, mechanics are old and tired at this point. But at the same time, you know, it's not a game for everybody. It was Gearbox brought Duke Nukem back from the dead for a very specific audience. And, I mean, it sold well enough, so I think that audience likes it, I mean, for what it is. And, you know, this is Gearbox taking over a game that's been in development hell to a legendary degree at this point. It's more about what are they going to do next with Duke Nukem, I think.
Yeah, I honestly hope that no game ever tries to ascend to be Duke Nukem Forever development style. I would assume the second Kiosis would have been probably Too Human, which I think had like four different consoles it was going to be on before it finally came out.
I liked Too Human, just saying.
And what's that game? With the portals, Prey. Prey also went through a similar situation.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, is there anything else we want to touch on before we wrap?
I want to hear what it's like for... Oh, what's that?
I said Fate Extra out this week, which is, like, the only reason to turn your PSP on, like, in the last year. So there's that, I guess.
I want to hear
like it's going to be way more interesting. So
I was just going to say I want to hear what it's like from Kalen, like what it's like to work with Ken Levine and Sean Elliott.
Oh, those are good guys. Sean's a riot. He's a real funny guy, real opinionated, and you know when he speaks up, he actually knows. You know he knows what he's talking about. So I think people listen to it, and then there's Ken, who's you know he's definitely a unique guy that, he's got some creative visions, and sometimes I think people, just, you know, they either don't see some of the stuff that's coming, or it's just interesting to hear some of the pitches that actually we get on the environment side. I mean, I think it helps, you know, it's like any game development studio. You gotta try things out, and you gotta, you know, see if it works or it's not gonna work, and, you know, a lot of things he's said has actually taken the game in a better direction. And I think it's good to kind of hear that input because sometimes you're so hovering over your work that you can't really see whether it's, you know, you've been working on it too long, so you can't see whether it's good or it's bad. You're just almost kind of, you know, apathetic to that at a point where it's just, you know, should I do this or should I not do this? And sometimes his objective eyes are good to get on that.
So, and, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, how normally you don't get the same kind of individual recognition in the games industry like directors and movies would, but it seems like Ken kind of has a more of that kind of director's role at Irrational. Is that an accurate statement, where he has like kind of final say and control over everything, and you know, it's kind of his vision being filtered through all these other people that are supporting
yeah.
him?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, he's definitely the one. He's the creative director, so everything's all going through him. And I think that's good with anything, in terms of if you have various ideas always coming in, then there's going to be constant change in all different directions. But he's allowed it, so, you know, it all goes through him in a way. And, you know, we bring him good ideas, and we're going to bring bad ideas, but that's just the process of learning. But I think it's good just that it does go through him, or at least it goes through somebody, that it allows you to kind of take a step back and be like, okay, it's now giving us a direction to march in, and that always helps the end product if there's a little bit of a clear goal, and it's not, you know, 10 different people saying, oh, it should be this, or no, it should be this, because sometimes that delays production, and, you know, it's just best to keep it on path, I guess.
And just, you know, as a final question, I guess, is how much of the game do you get to play during development? Like, do you play the entire thing, or do they just give you certain, like, videos to show you how the environments are coming along and stuff like that?
I mean, you know, I can definitely play through all aspects of the game, but for me, I have to oversee a couple different areas, and I'm more focused on the environment, so for me, I gotta know what's going on in each area. And that's just an important thing of knowing what we can use asset-wise or what we can try to get away with, because it comes down to how many assets and how many textures can we have in each area. So we got to kind of best utilize who we're putting on that. And for me, I've just been primarily focused on one area, and I'm just trying to make that area as polished as we can get it. And that just allows me to realize also what else is going on in the level.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, getting ready to wrap, do you want to plug, you know, well, you can plug your game. I think everybody knows what it is.
Yeah.
Your Twitter, you know, any place they can contact you or communicate with you if they wanted to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, I want to say, you know, thanks for having me on. It's kind of been a great idea to hear you guys, and it's always nice to hear different perspectives. I mean, especially what's been going on in the industry. Because sometimes you just hear it from just the developer side. That's not always the case. I mean, there's gamers out there, and there's people like you guys who are reviewing it and playing games, and I think that's important to hear all sides. Yeah, I mean, for contacting me, I'm online on Twitter. My name is Cadfax, CADFAX, and I'm always open to following new people and talking. Good conversation. So if you got something good to say, drop a line. I'm always there.
Okay, and thank you for joining. Thank you for being on. It was an honor. Terrific guest.
Thanks.
As usual, you can find us on iTunes if you want to leave us any reviews. You know, 5 stars works. I hate that system personally. like I said before, we have, you know, we're kind of getting up there now where we're putting up more video game reviews. We had Sonic Generations up. Jason put up his Battlefield review in the past, you know, 2 weeks. We've had Uncharted 3, we've had Batman Arkham City. Going forward, I have no idea if we're getting Modern Warfare 3. I don't know who's actually buying that. I probably won't get Super Mario 3D, and by the time the next podcast records, we'll see. I'm assuming that Jason or Ken will have, Adrian, I should say, will have Skyrim by then. It is odd that game comes out on a Friday.
Hey, it's a weird day.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
I did a bummer.
People they got are all excited.
They gotta get that 11-11-11.
I would assume the other thing would be to put it on that 15th, which at this point is a terrible day to be a game. I think there are like maybe 8 major games coming out on the 15th.
Really? That's a lot.
I think it's like Assassin's Creed.
Oh.
It's, what is it? I think it's the Halo remake.
I'm kind of pumped for the new Assassin's Creed to come out, because that means Brotherhood will probably get cheaper.
That's one way to think about it.
Yeah?
But yeah, you know, it's a great time to be a gamer if you have a job and money. Or the time, I should say. But yeah, thank you again. You know, for Killian, Chad, Jason, and myself, this has been Dual Wielding episode 50. Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing somewhere.
Beyond the shore, we'll kiss just as before.